we've talked about isolation a lot on the show.
It seems like once every third show. Yeah, we've talked about it in relation to space, yeah. like the International Space Station, mm-hmm. Stanford Taurus in a smaller respect, and maybe even on other planets, Mars. Yeah,
space colonization, exoplanets as well. Mm-hmm, we've also talked about it in relation to this planet, because we've talked about living in isolation during a pandemic. We've talked about seasonal affective disorders that as it all sort of pertained to that lockdown era that, you know, we're in now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's multiple ways to imagine what that scenario would be like.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, it's gone from imagining to real world scenarios.
We know more than we've ever known about isolation, but we still don't know what it would be like to live in a closed biosphere. You know who knows that?
There's some people who
there's
know that.
Very few people on this planet know the answer. Well, how many have lived in a closed biosphere for 2 years? 8 people. And one of them is joining us today.
Wow.
And her name is Jane Poynter. Jane,
perfect.
Welcome to What If Discussed.
Well, hello there, gentlemen.
Hello.
It's been a while, obviously, since, and you were such an integral part of obviously not just, you know, participating in the Biosphere 2 project, but also being part of the design leading up to it, and really the legacy work after a lot in terms of the, you know, where that science is being applied now. But I guess the first place to start, and I know it's just such a big question, but what was your experience in Biosphere 2?
So maybe it might be helpful before we talk about how I experienced living in Biosphere 2, just to sort of set the table a second and let everybody know what Biosphere 2 was, right? So I was on the design team of, this sounds very grandiose, but it's true. We were on the design team of humanity's first attempt at creating the world's first human-made biosphere, right? So we all live in a biosphere. That's Biosphere 1, the Earth. And we were attempting to create Biosphere 2, the first other biosphere. And so it was a 3-acre, and still is, it's still going today and is run by University of Arizona. It's a 3-acre enclosed environment that was completely sealed back in the day. It was sealed when I was in there, tighter than the International Space Station. So there was essentially no air exchange with outside. And so all of the plants inside, the rainforest, the savanna, the ocean, the marsh, the desert, and the farm were creating all of our oxygen. You know, we were creating some of the CO2 for all the plants. And so everything was recycling inside. And we drank the same water over and over again and breathed the same oxygen over and over again. Wow. So one of the incredible things about being inside Biosphere 2 was that experience. It was that experience of being viscerally part of my biosphere and really understanding what it is to have a finite biosphere. And for 8 people, Biosphere 2 was pretty small. And it turns out that's very akin to the kind of experience that astronauts have when they see the Earth from space. They see the Earth from the outside in, so they see the boundaries of this planetary biosphere that we all inhabit. And they too have a similar experience of, holy cow, our Earth is not that big.
Yeah.
So it was an amazing experience. It was also very hard because, you know, as you were talking about in the intro, being isolated is not necessarily the easiest thing.
No, that's what I think we're talking about. And you just mentioned with astronauts, I would think are the most isolated people. But after that, this is a huge isolation. But to go into something like that, really, you know, you really have to have a courage and some sort of sense of an explorer's curiosity. Obviously, you had that. Why do you think you were so willing to do this?
So it had nothing to do with being willing. It was like I had to do it. I was on the design team. And so was I seriously going to let somebody else go in and test this out? Of course, I had to go in. And it was also the closest thing I ever thought I would get to Mars. So for me, this was almost like going in and testing a prototype space base as if we were on Mars. And my favorite place to be was sitting on the beach that we had, looking out the incredible windows that were everywhere. And we were in the Arizona desert, and at sunset, the mountains around us turned red. And so for all the world, we were on Mars. So for me, it was living out this extraordinary live stream of going to Mars.
And it's interesting you say that, because I think not everybody, but a lot of people that, you know, I've talked to about this, you know, they seem to remember or equate Biosphere 2 with, you know, an environmental ecological endeavor, which of course it was. Again, a lot of the science, a lot of the recycling, all those things. But in the end, the impetus was, what would it be like to live on another planet.
Yeah.
So that was really something that was, you know, let's say ahead of its time at the time. Over the course of the last X amount of years, Jane, you know, you see movies like The Martian. I could go on and on in the sci-fi world. How much and how, I don't know, what's it been like for you to watch these people sort of apply some of those things in pop culture and sci-fi going forward as it relates to living on other planets?
Well, I absolutely loved The Martian. It was very true to life. I mean, as I was watching it, I was like, that's right.
But one of the, that's what I'm thinking, like one of the few people who are watching that movie going, well, that's absolutely accurate, you know, or that isn't.
Well, you know, and of course the author did a really good job of getting scientific input into what he was writing. So that was also very cool. I mean, it was very apparent. So I absolutely loved it and it's thrilling. So look, I've been in the human spaceflight world my entire adult life. And, you know, I thought back in the day when we were at Biosphere 2, we would be well on Mars by now. And at the time, America did have a plan to go to Mars. But, you know, as we know, plans change. So what's been super exciting is to really see what's going on with commercial space. And, you know, that's really taking off in such a huge way. You know, it's sort of almost an overnight success that's been many decades in the making. So it's very exciting to see that. You know, and I think what's super interesting and relevant about spaceflight and human spaceflight is that it has this really unique power to inspire, right? There's really few other things that I think really capture the world in its entirety and get people excited as spaceflight does. You know, and we were talking a second ago about astronauts and their experience of seeing Earth from space. And one of the things that I'm really drawn by is these sort of huge ideas. And so the huge idea of being able to give as many people to see Earth from space is incredibly important because, you know, with all of these extraordinary global challenges that we have right here in Biosphere 1, how important is it that we are based in a global perspective? So I think this human spaceflight, whether it's with a biosphere eventually or, you know, the kind of spacecraft that we see with the International Space Station is really, really important.
Yeah, a few years ago, I interviewed the late, great Edgar Mitchell, sixth man to walk on the moon.
Cool.
Right.
He, you know, obviously, as you would think, right, somebody who's an astronaut back in the day, well, what's their background usually? They're science people, they're military people, they're rigid. I don't want to say rigid, but you know what I mean?
They're structured.
They're not hippies.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's just say that, right?
Discipline.
Well, he comes back from having that experience, and he, I'm sure you're familiar with this, Jane, but he articulates what Jane's talking about. It transformed him to see the Earth.
Sure.
Like, and I don't mean just like he changed, oh, I'm going to change. No, he means he felt rewired from seeing the Earth on its own. I mean, other astronauts have talked about that, but it actually changed the entire course of his life after that. He started the Institute for Noetic Sciences, and he talked about it almost like a religious experience, Jane.
Yeah, so actually that's very common. And now we're beginning to see what I will loosely say a sort of quantifying what happens to people who go to space and have this experience. You know, I think, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but there's the commentary that, you know, we're going to space to explore space and instead we discovered the Earth. And what happens, and now you can see it actually changes behavior. Literally, it changes people's behavior. You know, like me going into Biosphere 2, I was all about space. I'm going to Mars. That's my only focus. Environment, who cares? And, you know, when I came out of the Biosphere, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Yes, I'm a Biospherian too. We're all Biospherians of planet Earth. And we should care. And it's important. And what you'll see with astronauts when they go to space, it's very similar. They go up. maybe they're involved in, you know, some social activities, a little bit of environment when they come back. There's a statistically significant increase in the amount of interaction they have with their communities and how involved they get with environmental and social causes of many kinds. It really is striking how it impacts us as a human to get that place, understand our place in our global biosphere.
So I guess all we need is to get everybody into space.
Hey, that's what I'm working on. But that's another story.
You were lucky enough to go and experience that. So that's obviously your perspective. There are many other perspectives on the success of Biosphere 2. But like a lot of things, with the benefit of time, we see more and more the value of what we learned from Biosphere 2 as it helps guide other projects and science. But what do you think is the most important legacy of Biosphere 2?
So, of course, there's many aspects of science that Biosphere 2 has directly impacted in climate change science and biogeocycling, all kinds of particular science about understanding how our planet works. But when I really boil it down, you know, one of the things that we have to remember is putting Biosphere 2 in its historical context. So we were designing Biosphere 2 in the 1980s, and I went inside in 1991. You know, there was barely an internet. You know, people were hardly, you know, you got to really put yourself back there, right? Mm-hmm. I was spelling the word biosphere down the phone to people. People didn't know what a biosphere is. And so Biosphere put not just the word biosphere in our lexicon, but the concept, the idea of what a biosphere is. And, you know, that's a hugely important and transformative idea for humanity that we now have, you know, this short form, our global biosphere. I think we all basically have a general understanding of what that means now. And you can really thank Biosphere 2 for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much more. I mean, I'm boiling over here with questions because I really want to get into the experience of being there, but also, you know, the social aspect of eight people, all the other things, the oxygen issue. Can you stick around, Jane, for a few more questions?
Sure. No problem.
So excellent. We'll follow up with Jane on the audio version.
Yeah, we'll continue to delve into all things Biosphere with Jane Poynter in the extended audio version of What If Discussed. If you're watching this on YouTube right now, just click on the link below. If you're already listening on the podcast, well, just stay tuned. And if you can't continue this journey with us, well, thanks as always for joining us on What If Discussed.
Welcome back to What If Discussed. We are talking with one of only eight people in the history of the world to live in a biosphere for 2 years. Jane Poynter and seven others embarked on a pretty incredible historic scientific journey of exploration and learning. When they entered Biosphere 2 in 1991, exiting in 1993, apparently relieved, I'm sure.
A real toilet again.
Yeah, like all of those things. There's so many questions, Jane, for obviously anybody who's, you know, on the outside looking in this case, figuratively and literally, of the experience that you had. It's an enclosed environment. So all of a sudden we find ourselves these days living with some isolation that we didn't necessarily anticipate. It's not in the area code of what you experienced, obviously. No. I got to believe people are looking to bend your ear these days, or at least asking you about, how do people coexist, and is it feasible for people to coexist for a long period of time as biospherians? And that used to be, I think, a totally hypothetical, but now it's a little less hypothetical.
Yeah, so look, we were eight people living in a 3-acre chamber for 2 years and 20 minutes. And when I went into Biosphere 2, I was incredibly naive about what was going to happen. You know, I thought, oh, you know, this great environment will all bring us together. We'll be one happy family working on this amazing project together. Not at all. So it turns out that eight people is the worst number you can possibly have in a small environment.
Because
So there's a whole constellation of symptoms that tends to occur with people in extended extreme enclosure like that. And one of them is you break into factions, and four, you get with eight, you get 4-on-4, and that's what we did. So, and it's very stable, right? So if you had an odd number, 7 or 9, it would have, you know, been a very different dynamic for sure. So, you know, it was the most incredible experience of being inside Biosphere 2. It was also the hardest thing I've ever done. You know, I think most of us, or at least speaking for myself, this, you know, type A person, I was, you know, of course I can handle anything. And then going into Biosphere 2, realizing that I had not realized dealt with my inner life much at all. You know, it's all outside. And then you're enclosed and suddenly you, all you've got left is yourself. And I think, you know, as I've talked to people who are enclosed now, that's, you know, that's part of the challenge we have. We don't have anything like the impressions and, you know, stuff that's keeping us busy all day long and distracting us all day long and all the variety of things that we do in our lives and under other circumstances. And a lot of that has disappeared. And so it makes people really have to face themselves, and it gets quite uncomfortable for a lot of people. So if I was to say, you know, that, so if you're going to talk about, okay, so what do we do about that? Well, obviously one thing is you get professional help if that, you know, if it really gets there. And we did certainly inside Biosphere 2. And it was very helpful just to have somebody else to talk to who wasn't the team. So you could vent it for no other reason. But it's also super important to create what's called different behavior settings. You know, so some of what we're all doing is working at home, we're, you know, playing at home, the whole bit at home. And it all becomes this giant mush with nothing really breaking it up particularly. And so it's really important to create different settings if you can. It turns out that generally, you know, we go to work, which is a different group of people in a different location. You go to the gym, which is a different location, different group of people, a different thing. You're at home, etc. This is all one. And that's it creates a tremendous amount of stress for a lot of people. And that's exactly what we had in the Biosphere. And so all of these things that we're doing with reaching out to people outside our family and our home is very natural and is very important in part. In fact, on station, on the space station now, they allow the astronauts to talk with their families and friends on the ground quite a lot for that very reason. So it's really normal and a very important thing to do. But it's also really important not to, if you can, do your day job at your dining room table.
Yeah.
You got to break it up, or it all feels like one giant mush.
We're all learning that right now.
Yeah, but these are super helpful. I mean, just even that, right? Somebody might think, yeah, whatever, it's just a good place to sit. But yes, then it's your whole existence is taking place where you're eating. It's where you're, I mean, it's an interesting time. And again, sort of speaking to science and studying what you're talking about, I'm sure you're familiar with blue zones and, you know, those places for people who aren't, you know, those little pockets in the world and, you know, Japan, we've talked about it before on the show, and Greece and different places in the world, that all of a sudden there's this village where, you know, I'm exaggerating a bit, but everybody lives to 110. It's like, what the hell's going on over there? Like, let's get in there. Let's study. There's got to be something in the water. So inevitably, they've gone to these little pockets in China and again, South Africa and other parts of the world, Greece, Japan, where these people live these disproportionately longer, happier, healthier lives. And of course, what does the data ultimately tell them? Well, yes, diet's very important, super important. But is it the number one determinant? No. Exercise and movement? Yes, of course, that's important. But is it the number one determinant? And what they find, Jane, time and time again, is that the number one determinant that sort of contributes to that longer, happier, healthy life in those people is social interaction and community. It seems that the science from your experience at the Biosphere 2, as well as around us, is telling us that it's not just a luxury, human interaction, it's a vital part of living. How do we do that while also at this particular time dealing with a pandemic?
You know, I think it's really interesting. So one of the things that I experienced in the Biosphere was that I got incredibly attuned to people's emotional state by listening to them speak down the telephone. And people would come to the window and we had the Biosphere in handshake, where you put your we put our hand up against the glass and they put up their hand up on the glass on the outside. Exactly.
Search for Spock, exactly. I think. Spock and Captain.
Precisely. Well done. So, you know, we got very used to interacting that way. I started a company over the phone with people I'd never met. We're doing all that now.
Yeah.
So I think social media has gotten a little bit of a rap of, you know, creating these very shallow relationships. And I think there's an aspect of that that's true. But I think we're discovering how to create relationships long distance, maintain relationships long distance and meaningfully so. Never going to be a replacement for being in the same room for sure. But, you know, we've just hired people without ever meeting them for the first time. I fundraised without ever meeting people for the first time. I mean, it's a completely different environment. And, you know, we're having to use different senses, right? Where some of our senses are getting heightened that previously we perhaps hadn't used before because we didn't have to. So I'm actually finding that, interestingly, I've gotten in touch with people and had conversations and meaningful conversations and interactions with people that I haven't seen in so long, just because everybody previously thought you had to go get on a plane and see them. Mm-hmm. And now that's not the case. And so there's an aspect of this that I think is actually helpful in helping us figure out how to become this global sort of community of people that can have meaningful relationships at long distance.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we're going to come out of this on the other side, finely tuned to be able to work smarter and harder.
Yeah, and more connected, I guess, in ways, right?
Yeah. Well, one more question about the...
I mean, look, it'll never replace everybody, you know, laughing and having a good time around the dinner table together. But it's certainly a fantastic tool to be able to connect with loved ones. There is just no question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll easily be able to switch from remote to face-to-face with no problem at all. One more question about the biosphere, Jane. We know that oxygen became an issue very quickly. Can you just tell us what happened? How did it feel? And what was the scientific gold that came from it?
Well, so what happened was that it was actually a very simple error in the design of the biosphere. We put way too much compost in the soil. At the time, you know, modeling wasn't that awesome and we weren't able to do as detailed modeling of all the carbon and oxygen and other species throughout the living system. So we ended up with too much carbon in the soil. And of course, as carbon breaks down by all the microbes in the soil, it took oxygen out of the atmosphere and put CO2 into the atmosphere. What was highly confounding for a long period of time was that we were seeing the oxygen going down, but we weren't seeing the normal amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was finally discovered that the CO2 was getting absorbed by all the concrete that was throughout the biosphere. It was acting like one gigantic carbon dioxide scrubber and taking and just soaking up the CO2. So effectively, the oxygen that we needed to breathe ended up in the concrete. So, there was actually several things that were really interesting about that. You know, first of all, when we, you know, Biosphere 2 was this incredible test for, can you even do it? Can you create a human-made biosphere on a scale that, you know, everything is out of scale with planet Earth? It's tiny. Your ocean is a different scale from your rainforest. You know, there's a whole bunch of biomes missing. The atmosphere is the wrong size. And will it persist? And also, will it allow people to live in it? And so obviously, when you look at that, you go, well, you've just said, no, it doesn't, because the oxygen went missing. Well, it turns out it was a design flaw, not actually an issue with biospheres itself. I later proved that with designing biospheres that we sent to the International Space Station. That was really cool and a whole other story. So we were able to show that you could really measure in exquisite detail what was going on with every atom in the biosphere. You know, up to that time, a lot of the scientists were going, oh, you guys are just cheating. It's open. You know, it's not as sealed as you say it is. And the moment we showed that we were having oxygen issues and then it eventually figured out where it was, the scientific community basically said, oh, okay. Yeah. I guess you guys are right. This really was sealed, because otherwise there's no way you would have found it. And then sort of another sort of really fun, thankful, lucky conversation we had afterwards was, you know, we were at NASA afterwards talking about the whole experiment and went through this whole story about what was going on with the oxygen. And at that time, you know, again, back in the early 90s, after the talk, one of the researchers came up to us and said, I am so happy you came and gave this talk, because until now, we were thinking of building all of our habitats out of concrete.
Hmm. So is it safe to say up to that point, we didn't know that cement soaked up carbon dioxide?
And what's funny is we as a species did, most humans did not. It turns out that how we discovered this was serendipitous. So we were working with a scientist at Columbia, yeah. And his father had just coincidentally come across some construction documents that talked about bridges collapsing because the rebar in the cement broke way before it should have because of the uptake of CO2 into the concrete, and it creates an acidic environment. Hmm. So it was like this completely random construction papers that had been written. So yes, as a species, we knew this, but it had not quite permeated into those of us designing biospheres. Yeah. It was not readily available information.
Sounds like your Apollo 13 moment, though, at that particular time, right? Where everybody had to kind of scramble unanticipated and fix a problem in real time.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we couldn't really fix the problem because it was such a grand scale. Right. We ended up having to pump oxygen in. And you asked, how did it feel? Oh, my gosh. So we were
like not a breath of fresh
adapting.
Air.
Yeah, we were not adapting to the low CO2 quite the way one normally would if you go up to like Lhasa. If you go up to the Himalayas, you know, if you go mountain climbing, you sit around for a while at base camp acclimating. Well, it turns out that we weren't acclimatizing for a whole bunch of physiological reasons. And so the low oxygen just made us feel terrible. And, you know, we were like crawling around the biosphere, and we had coffee every 2 months. And the people on the outside could tell when we had had coffee because we actually moved at normal pace. So it was pretty bad. And then the day when we put oxygen in, we pumped the oxygen into one of those lungs. We had a variable volume chamber. We called them lungs because there were two of them. So it was a variable volume chamber that took up the expansion and contraction of the atmosphere during because of the heating and cooling of the atmosphere on a Diana cycle. And so we pumped all the oxygen into one of these chambers. So we went into the chamber and it was like 28%. Of course, ambient is 21%. And at that point, we were down at about 14.5%. So we walk into the lung, and for the first time in a year, we were all running and jumping around the biosphere. It was like instantaneously, we suddenly realized how valuable oxygen is in our everyday life.
Wow. Talk about the ultimate example of, you know, we take for granted so much. And in this case, we obviously take for granted the air we breathe. Yeah. And until it's taken from you, you have no idea how important it is to your overall quality of life. Well, we could go on and on, obviously, Jane, because there's no shortage of fascinating stories, but also things that we can learn. But we do really appreciate you taking the time, because we know you're very busy with a pretty incredible project. And it's, you know, I don't know if it's a tag to say that you're an overachiever, because I don't know what the expectations were, but I've looked at your life and I'm like, wow, that's like 10 lifetimes.
Yeah,
like, it's a pretty incredible life you've lived. What is this particular adventure? Because it sounds like it's not just exciting for you. It sounds like it's exciting for all of us.
Oh, yeah. So it's called Space Perspective, and it is what's behind me here. And so I was talking a little earlier about how astronauts have this extraordinary experience of seeing Earth in space. And how transformative it is for them. And so we want to take as many people as possible to the edge of space to be able to have that experience. And so we're doing it in a way that is very gentle and in many ways very accessible, physically and emotionally very accessible, because it is so gentle. There is no rocketry involved. You're going to space at a roaring 12 miles an hour. So you're basically going, almost going with the column of air. So it's very smooth.
Wow.
Right? Yeah, it's super smooth. So almost anyone can get on this physically. And so we want to be able to give people sort of this contemplative experience of seeing Earth in space, which is really the way astronauts experience it, right? When they're looking out the window of the International Space Station at Earth, they're just hanging there, relaxed, looking out the window. That's what we want to be able to give people, and as many people as we can. I think it's going to be personally transformative for some people who go, and I think it's also an incredibly important thing for today when we really need as many people as possible to have a global perspective as we are managing our global challenges.
Yeah, what a wild ride from 2 years in a 3-acre biosphere to literally then now being outside looking in on the planet Earth. It's a wild ride, Jane Poynter. It's an incredible life, and we really appreciate you taking time to share it with us and the What If Discussed audience. So good luck with everything, and that amazing endeavor that I think we'll all benefit from, and we'll catch up with you down the line.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
Thanks, Jane.
So, great stuff with Jane Poynter. Again, a woman of, incredible accomplishments. I don't think you could achieve more than bringing people into space to help rewire them in a way that changes them to a global perspective that helps all of us make the world a better place. But no matter what, I will always feel that the 2 years spent in a biosphere project will have to be the, I don't want to say the most significant experience of your life, but I just can't imagine doing it. Like, I mean, it's because in the end, we're talking about prison-ish, aren't we?
Well, it's a little better than prison in that, she talked about sitting on a beach and watching the mountains change color in the sunset.
3 acres.
Yeah. I mean, it's you're not getting that at San Quentin. But certainly you are
almost
enclosed.
A spit take there.
One thing that sort of stood out for me too. Like, eight people go in, and factions become an issue. Like, you end up. I would have thought, okay, everyone's in this together, discovering things and helping to like make the world a better place. But no, yeah, you get into arguments and you.
And isn't it interesting because she talked about the optimum number not being eight. Now, when she said that, though, I thought, well, you'd have to have even, because if it was 5 and 4, you're getting into, that sort of a survivor alliance, vote somebody off the island type stuff. But regardless, especially at the times we're in where we talk about polarization and dualism and all these different things, and people are talking about tribalism and this side versus that side. And then you take 8 human beings, you put them into an environment. You'd have to imagine these people liked each other before going in, right? Like, you wouldn't agree, I don't think, to even participate in something if you're like, hey, this guy drives me nuts.
Well, I mean, astronauts go through that before they go into a mission?
Yeah, for sure.
They have to like have personality tests and make sure that they're going to get along with each other.
And I think, remember, even in the movie The Right Stuff, I think that was part of the lead up to going out, is they make sure you're socializing. They make sure you have personalities that can mesh and whatever, because that's going to be the biggest struggle of all.
Yeah. And 2 years is a long time.
2 years is a long time.
Maybe they did the personality tests that, we would have got along well for the first 3 months, and then they didn't anticipate what was going to happen.
This is because in the end, of course, what you're talking about is, and I think this is one of those learning experiences, it's like the, you do a survey, ask people, would they like to join a gym? Whatever. Let's use that as an example.
Everyone says yes.
Everyone says yes. Yeah. You find out later, well, actually, in actuality, the numbers were much lower.
I'm not going and I'm not paying.
So with this, I think you would say, I don't know this, but okay, let's do these personality tests. Let's see if people are going to coexist. Let's see if, obviously there's going to be a doctor and this person is going to have this role and this person's going to have that role. And okay, it all works. Did we factor in less than optimum living conditions, less than optimum amount of oxygen, literally being difficult. You're at your worst.
Yeah.
So how many of us can get along with people, tolerate people, be patient when we're at our best or normal? But when you put us in that type of state, we don't have a lot of patience.
You last a few minutes.
A few minutes.
And this whole thing was an experiment to see if it would work, how it would work. So you know you're going to run into obstacles all over the place. So there's going to be differences of opinion at every turn.
Which they would have looked into. And in the end, which is really interesting, because again, imagine when they did this. I assume the movie was after, but I don't know 100%, the Pauly Shore movie, Biodome.
I didn't see it.
With the Baldwin that went hard Christ after.
Billy.
Stephen, I think.
Stephen, okay.
But I have never seen the movie, but outside of the hilarity that no doubt ensues in that movie.
Well, with Pauly Shore.
Yes. It's a game mess. We haven't seen... You know, we haven't seen this replicated in a way that was even remotely similar. And more than likely, I expect that the next time we do see it replicated, probably won't be on this planet.
No, I was just thinking, yeah, on the moon or on
like
Mars.
We're not like in 91 that like as she talked about, though, which is interesting in 91. And I do remember that like Mars being like, oh, well, 2000, yeah, not 2000.
That's the next step.
And now I don't think anybody thinks we're 20 or 30 years away. Like that's probably even close. I don't know.
This is a story for another what if.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, did it all fall apart because the space race sort of fell apart? Russia,
I think
USA
for sure that did.
No longer.
I think you're right. 100%. You didn't have then. I mean, look, Kennedy says in, I think it's 60 or 61, you know, others ask why, we ask why not, whatever the speech was.
That's not what you,
you know, and all of that. But it's, you know, it's challenging us to get to the moon by 1970, of course, or us, the U.S., to get to the moon by 1970. Of course, they get there in 69, but driven 100% by the fact that the Russians were
Cold War
and had already gone to space and whatever. Yeah, you take that out of the equation. Well, where do you see the incentive now? You see it from people like Jane. You see it from people like Elon Musk, but it's private sector driven. Now, her endeavor, again, to be able to allow people to experience what she talked about, that Edgar Mitchell thing we're saying where you get to see the whole planet and the transformative effect that has on people. I agree 100% that that's real. I mean, obviously.
How could it not be, right?
And so if we could get people up there for the price of a, you know, a subway ride or a plane ticket, it won't be cheap. But I do suspect that, you know, when we're doing this show in 20 years, we're talking about people that have not just gone to space, but have come back and tell us about it.
Everyone we talk to will have been somebody who has been to space and back. Are we still doing this show 20 years from now? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, if you got time, I don't know. Hopefully we're not still in isolation.
Well, it will require the listeners to keep coming back and coming back.
Well, signing up for the newsletter as well.
Well, you know what? Why don't I tell you about that? But first, thanks to Jane Poynter for joining us on today's What If Discuss.
Thanks, Jane.
Like Richard said, if you want more What If, well, sign up for the What If Explorers Club newsletter. We're going into biodomes. We're going to space. We're not actually. We're just writing a newsletter on a weekly basis.
Still about exploring.
But it gives you tons of cool science stuff, and it lets you know what we're doing here behind the scenes at What If. You can see what videos we're working on, maybe what podcasts we might be working on.
A little behind the scenes of the production here of What If Discussed.
Yeah, we'll show you pictures of Richard and I on the desk here.
Demede getting everything ready.
Demede, our producer Demede. So if you want all that, go to whatifshow.com. That's whatifshow.com. That's it for today. I was going to say we'll see you next time on What If Discussed, but that doesn't really make any sense, does it? Because people are listening.
They're listening, they're watching, they're feeling.
We'll talk to you next time
on What If Discussed.